Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 37 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So this week started off, I would say, as normal. It was pretty usual. We started with an Instagram photo at the beginning of the week, which we'll get to later. But we have to start with the big stuff. Thursday, toward the end of the week, we were hit with some pretty big news. And to be honest, this was the news I was looking for last week.
I think this is the news we've wanted since... We obviously knew they weren't going to give it to us, like, last year.
No.
But this has been so long in coming. I have been reading that people have been getting more than twitchy about not having a date.
So the big news, obviously, I'm sure you all know this, is that we have our premiere date. And it is going to be... Drum roll, please. We don't have a drum roll, so I'm just going to keep going. August 9th. It's a Saturday, 9 p.m. And can I just say...
Or can I say...
No. Stars, we would like to say thank you from the podcast for making the show a Saturday night show, which allows us to continue...
Having a life.
Having a life and also... Some to kind. Stick with our current production schedule for our podcast so that we can still release our podcast on Sundays. I think it's very considerate of Stars to have done this for us. I'm not so short-sighted to think that they did this for us, but I appreciate it anyway.
Very much so.
Also, in conjunction with the release date, they released a new poster with new art. And I think, honestly, this is the best still they've released so far, or best artwork for the show, because I really think that it captures the feeling of what is going down. And it's got, you know, Frank's hand reaching from the future, and Jamie standing behind her from the past.
But her future,
which I think is so funny because, you know, normally, you know, you see somebody you're leaving behind, they're behind you, but she's leaving the person in front of her and moving backwards. So I think it's just really smart art.
She looks like she's walking away from Frank. Her body is toward Jamie.
I mean, she's moving backwards. Right, but she's moving backwards in time is what I'm saying. She's moving behind her and leaving what's in front of her to move to what's behind her. But it's also going to be in front of her because she's...
It's a beautiful poster, and someone said, or one of the comments...
I love the colors.
I love it. And one of the comments that I read was that how this poster, of course, you're not seeing all of Frank, you're just seeing his hand, but this poster really showed the three main characters.
Oh, for sure.
Claire, Jamie, and Scotland.
But look how much... It's true.
And Scotland.
I know, but look how much they're also showing with this one picture. They're showing... His wedding ring, Frank's wedding ring.
Yeah.
So you know it's her husband from the future that she's obviously leaving. So while she's still reaching back, like, you know, she's saying, you know, I love you or whatever, she's also moving towards the Highlander who's also wanting her. But, I mean, this is obviously not the main crux of the story. Is it a big part of the story? Absolutely. But it is not, the whole story isn't her choice. It's not her making that decision.
I think we said before that was the first big climax of the story, I think.
For sure, but there were several. But that's not when the story ends. Diana could have very well ended the story there, but she didn't. And I'm glad, I mean, I'm sure we're all totally glad she didn't because there was so much more story to tell. But with most romance novels, and this is not a romance novel, but I'm saying with most female literature, whatever, with females as the main character, with most of those stories... And even with, like, Jane Austen, they all end with that decision. Like, oh, they're getting married.
Once you're with your hubby.
Yeah, once you've made the decision, that's the story. So, I mean, I think that's also what's kind of neat about the way Diana writes. But there's obviously so much more story that even happens after this choice is made. But that is a crux of at least the first half of the series. And I think it tells a lot of the story with, like, one image.
It's loaded.
Definitely. And I love her hair. I think her hair looks great
wild.
In this shot. So they also released two other pictures with this, and it was a picture of Sam and Katrina holding a little laminated sign that says Outlander with the premiere date, and then we also got a picture of Sam with his boys, his merry men, with Grant and
Well, you can name the name. Is there a name the characters?
I can't. I'm looking at it, and that's the only name I remember. So I'm just going to go back with characters. So we've got Sam with Rupert. Or, I'm sorry, Jamie with Rupert, Dougal, Murta, and... Forgive me, I don't know who that is in the background.
Oh, that's Willie.
Willie.
It hasn't been explained which Willie.
Don't even say that.
Apparently there were two. But my guess is it's his brother and he's from a flashback.
Don't you always need two Willies in a love triangle? She's shaking her head at me. That means she's going to edit that out. Instagram, we had two new photos from Outlander Instagram account. We started the week with a picture of Colm looking very clean shaven. So I don't know when that could be. Is that, you think it's a flashback shot?
So
no, but his hair is markedly not gray.
Yeah, that's true.
So it has to be some sort of a flashback. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to see where that falls. And it's a week of grooming, I would say. The photos were very much about grooming. The second shot we got was of Black Jack Randall in his, I guess his red coat attire minus the coat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it looks like when you take your coat
off.
His
vest?
Definitely in a vest. It's a very long vest.
It is.
Sure. But I enjoy the fact that his sleeves are rumpled, as in it looks like he's just taken his coat off, and that's what they would have come out from his coat looking like. So it's very detailed. But he is also being groomed. Very well groomed.
And someone, I read somewhere, someone noted that just like Sam and other pictures we've seen, he's quite in character, even at
this. Always. Well, who's not in character is the chick in the background with a giant smile on her face.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be happy to be there too, to be honest. It'd be hard to not smile. But I would try for you, Stars. If you have an extra role for me, I would do my best to keep it all on the serious note. So before we go into our read-along, we would like to feature our first... Oh, no, technically it's our second whiskey of the month. We decided to start the month. I mean, we did one last week, but that was one that we'd actually...
Done before. A week before.
So for our first on-air whiskey tasting, if you will, we decided to go with a... Not an old standby, per se, but one you could definitely find down at your local liquor store or even grocery store, depending on what part of the country you're in. Because some parts of the country, they actually don't sell liquor in grocery stores, which I came to find out when I lived in the South. A single malt Scotch whiskey by the name of The Glenlivet. And it actually says The Glenlivet. I guess I never noticed that before. The Glenlivet. It's a single malt Scotch whiskey, guaranteed 12 years of age.
And let's start by smelling it.
I'll smell it, okay. I'm really nervous, you guys.
Just smell it. We're smelling in the bottle right now.
Okay.
Does it smell sweet?
Kind of.
See, that's the
kind of sweet. It is a really pretty bottle.
It's a very pretty bottle.
And let's read what it says in the back. The mineral-rich water of Josie Swell and distillation through its tall, elegant pot stills give the Glenlivet, its much-prized fruity Speyside character... with a subtle yet distinctive complexity. The Glenlivet, 12 years old, elegantly combines the gentle aromas of summer meadows and tropical fruits. Fresh floral flavors with the notes of vanilla develop into a soft finish that adds an enticing richness to this acclaimed single malt whiskey.
So we've got fruity, vanilla, and what else?
Tropical fruit. Tropical.
And summer meadows.
Not just fruit. Tropical fruit. And summer meadows.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
How'd you get in the bottle? I'm just kidding.
I was like, wait, what?
Is this your cup, right?
Yes, I'm drinking out of the very tiny Hello Kitty cup. It's the smallest cup I could find, and I wanted to make sure she just literally splashed. Oh, God, that's a lot.
Oh, my Lord. Summer, there's hardly anything in there.
Okay.
Hold on.
I'm not doing it by myself.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Are you ready?
Very nervous. I like it. I know.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go.
That is smooth.
No, it's not.
It is smooth. Lovely.
All right, I will say this.
It's better than the others.
No, I'm not going to say that.
Not.
No, what I'm going to say is that the aftertaste, if you will, isn't awful. But what...
But it burns.
What happens when it's in my mouth before it goes down my esophagus and in my stomach and I'm just left with the aftertaste is not pleasant for me. Maybe I'm just not cold enough. Maybe I need to be on the side of a mountain dying of frostbite, and then I will truly appreciate whiskey.
I'm looking at the glass. When I took a sip, I have a clear glass.
If that were wine, I would say it had legs.
But look at this. Remember what you said last week about the whiskey in general? You weren't talking about one kind, but the whiskey that we did the tasting was like gasoline for a few reasons. Well, look at this. It's not like water would come up and go down, and there might be a few droplets.
That, okay.
This is almost, it's not viscous, but I can see what you mean about the gasoline.
Yeah, that, but this would be what, okay, if this were wine, I obviously know a little bit more about wine, a little bit, not a lot. If this were like wine, I would say this had legs, and that is an indicator, with wine at least, of a sugar content. The higher a sugar content, the more it runs down the cup like that. It's called having legs, but,
Well, this definitely has legs, because it'll carry you off somewhere, or at least to your bed. But.
Or give you the strength to carry on, if you will. But, man. Okay.
There's a song in there somewhere.
So, the search continues for a whiskey that Summer likes. Again, I'm really looking for suggestions, so if you are a whiskey aficionado, or consider yourself to be, I don't know if they have an official certification program for that or not, but please, let me know.
We did receive a few ideas from Arlen, and we are going to look into those so we can at least incorporate hopefully one of them into one of our tastings.
Maybe next time we'll go with something a little more exotic, but we started with something that you all could find to begin with. And now on to our read-along. This week we did two chapters, but let's start the evening off by discussing chapter 32, Hard Labor.
The chapter begins with Claire foraging, and Jamie, who had been helping bringing in the harvest, comes to find her, and they watch the sunset together. They discuss very briefly how they must leave Lallybroch soon, and Jamie says there are English soldiers about 20 miles away. Claire remembers when Jenny finally accepted her as a member of the family. The men were tired from having worked in the fields, and they were yawning at the dinner table. Jenny says that she wondered if she stopped talking at the table, if they would fall asleep. Sure enough, 2 minutes later, they were both asleep.
That whole image was so funny to me. And also, can you imagine how funny it would be to Claire to leave the room with, like, the plates and stuff to go pick up the dessert and walk back in and see the men just, like, zonked. Flat out zonked on the table. And Jenny just sitting there.
And as Claire laid a hand at the back of Jamie's neck to soothe him, because he kind of twitched or did something in his sleep, he smiled. And Jenny remarked that he used to do that when he was young, and smile in his sleep. And she says she thinks it means he's happy.
Okay, question. Who all tried that with their significant other? Or their children, to see if you could get that to happen. I kind of wondered. I've never done that with my daughter, but I kind of wonder if it would work. If she would smile if I rubbed her back when she slept.
Well, Jamie may be happy in his sleep, but someone's about to go into labor. So Jenny goes into labor that night, and Claire tells Jamie to send for the midwife. She has not had much training delivering babies, as of yet. I think she said she had had
she's seen. Three. She's three. She'd seen three, but in her she training. Had not, yeah.
Jenny
but
says,
they were under sterile circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
And there
was a focus of one thing.
Right.
Jenny sends Ian to make sure he and Jamie are both fed. So basically, menfolk, go away. Go feed yourselves.
Well, she knows there's nothing they could do but sit.
Exactly.
And it would just, honestly, I think that in those circumstances and at that time period, they would just be in the way.
Of course. Jamie arrives with the midwife, and Claire observes. She notices that Jenny is sweating and that, quote, giving birth is bloody hard work.
Dude, I will second that, because even though I had an epidural,
you still
oh yeah, feel
for sure.
Movement. But what was so funny is at the end of it, I had braided my ponytail. I put my hair in a ponytail and then braided the hair. So I had a braid, I had long hair at the time, hoping to keep my hair from getting tangled. I had like one giant dreadlock at the end of it. Like, I think I used an entire bottle of conditioner to get the dreadlock out of my head. It was the most ridiculous thing ever.
But hadn't she already made this observation when she was helping the mare? When she had her, she was shoulder deep in the mare's business, trying to turn the
pole? I mean, true, but she's not shoulder deep in Jenny's business.
Any mammal that, mammals give live birth.
Yeah.
Except for a platypus. Of course, it's not, okay, let's step back for a second.
But
if you're
some
a bear,
animals, no,
if you're
no,
a,
no,
hold on,
no.
If you're a 400-pound bear, you know how big that baby is? Like my pinky.
No. Just think
that's
about
not
it.
Painful.
No, think about marsupials. They like,
yeah, like
they have teeny tiny itty bitty things
that's
that
true.
Must like.
So it, must, I recant. It is not every single mammal. Or even large mammals. Like I said, bears, their babies are like the size of my pinky. So it ain't no fair.
Bears?
Bears have really itty bitty babies.
Bears do?
Yes.
They don't
really?
Give birth.
Yes.
Okay, I know camels. I know.
These
that's because you said mammals. I know that. Like, kangaroos have tiny babies, and most mammals that have pouches have tiny babies. and they kind of emerge from the mother's hoo-ha and climb up into their pouch and then, you know, live in their pouch for a good long time. But I can't imagine. I didn't know the bears were tiny. We're totally looking this up right now. A pound and a half, and it's 8 inches long. Oh, those are pretty tiny.
So, okay, it's not my pinky.
No, not your pinky. But still tiny. I mean, bears are huge. To have a 1 pound baby. I mean, humans have seven.
That's what I'm saying. Humans have like the worst.
What the heck?
Damn Garden of Eden.
What Dang up? It, Eve. You and your apple fascination.
Stop it.
Anyway, sorry.
So, giving birth is hard work. So Jenny says, if the child lives, it's to be Margaret Ellen.
Jenny does have the sight, y'all.
Yes. And the midwife says not to worry. They all think. So Claire's like, what is she thinking? She's like naming her child now in case she doesn't live. You know, what's going on? And the midwife's like, don't worry. At this point, they all think they're going to die. And then she's like, mind you, sometimes they do.
It's true. Now, I never thought I was going to die while giving birth, but I did reach a point where
Maybe
I was
you
like,
wanted to die?
I definitely did, but I think the words out of my mouth were, I can't do this. I don't think I can do this. And all the nurses just look at you and smile and then go, push. So
the labor continues, and Jenny is, of course, exhausted, and Mrs. Martins seems to be a little worried, finally, at some point. Claire suggested that perhaps the child wasn't turned correctly, and the midwife works to turn the baby. And I thought it was cool. That was a pretty cool midwife. She wasn't offended by some newbie woman, English woman at that, who is new, you know, the wife of the new wife of the laird and thinks she's, you know, trying to take over
No,
something.
I didn't like that. Because I know that if somebody walked into my office at work and tried to tell me that I was using my calculator wrong, I would throw a fit. So kudos to them for being much more open-minded than me.
So this does help, and finally the baby shifts and there is progress and they're able to, at least it's lined up correctly. But Jenny still has a lot of work to do pushing down the baby and the midwife and asks Claire to help her. And so now you have Jenny, Claire, and the midwife pushing on the baby to get it out. She gives Jenny what I assume is a perineal massage. She has some kind of oil that she has with her. And all Diana says is she goes through the oil and then she does massage between her legs.
Yes.
It has to be the perineal massage to keep it from getting
tearing.
Yeah. Then Diana tells us Margaret Ellen Murray entered the world like a grease pig.
Okay. So, here's the thing. Whenever I read
this part,
and I read about, and I know people who have midwives that do that, the perineal massage, I always kind of think to myself, that's the last thing I want going on down there at that point.
Especially at that point, sure.
I'm like, get away. All I'm trying to do is, like, remove things from my body.
I don't, not add to it.
No.
Jenny tells Claire to go tell Ian that the baby's arrived. And as Claire enters the room, it looks like Ian may have been passed out and that Jamie was not too far away from it, that they were quite in their cups. And Claire grips Ian by the shoulder and intends to tell him, you know, smarten up, wake up, lad.
She gets a little teed off.
Yeah, but Jamie tells her to wait, and she realizes that Ian thought she may have been coming down to tell him that Jenny was dead. So,
which was not uncommon.
Of course not. His mom died.
Under the circumstances.
Jamie's mom had died in childbirth. So she tells him that she's fine and that he has a daughter. When everyone is cleaned up, they have supper in Jenny's room. I think that's kind of neat.
They do, but I also love this. That they say, what is it? Margaret Ellen peed.
Yes. So they're all having supper in the room. And Margaret, in her father's arms, she's totally sweet looking, cute, everything, and then she just like scrunches up or whatever and just pees on her dad. Little Jamie jumps on the bed and snuggles with his mother. Jamie has a turn to hold his niece and seems remarkably competent
at doing so. And then it just breaks my heart when like she writes that he was reluctant to hand her back.
When they retire to their room, Jamie says to Claire, paraphrasing here, perhaps it's just as well that you're barren. And to me, that kind of came out of the blue. And Claire does stiffen a little bit, but he says that Galas told him after they wed that she was barren. And he thinks it's probably better given the way they have to live. Always.
On the run, basically.
On the run, basically, yeah.
Could you imagine?
Mm-hmm. And he says he
wouldn't. I don't even like taking a kid to the grocery store. I can't imagine trying to outrun redcoats.
And he says he wouldn't want her to suffer that way. And she says, after a long pause and thought, she says, I wouldn't mind. But he says, I would. I can bear pain myself, but I couldn't bear yours.
Unless he's spanking her.
Well, that he enjoys that.
That's what I'm saying.
He says, that would take more strength than I have. And then it's on to chapter 33. Which is called The Watch.
Dude, and it's all downhill from here. And by downhill, I don't mean it gets worse. I just mean it's on. This is where the story really picks up steam, and I feel like before you know it, you're at the end of the book. Like, just everything's just happening. Like, if you're reading this and you're actually stopping and waiting to follow the read along, you're having a real hard time at this point.
It would be difficult. So Jenny recovers from the birth of her daughter and spends only a day or two, quote, doing nothing, and ends up in the kitchen in the garden a few days later. And wee Jamie is getting into some trouble with the washing, spilling water and splashing it on Claire's, dirty water, on Claire's skirts. Now, when Jenny is getting after him, it may seem that she was a little bit harsh with her reprimand, but I do look at things, admittedly now, with new eyes. Since our conversation with Diane about how much time it takes to took to clothe people, and of course to feed them and keep things running, this, while it's not as bad as if someone's clothes had maybe been, you know, burned. And totally destroyed.
Well, and
the task took so much time.
True. But also the other thing that I took from this was, you know, as a mother, when my child does something that I don't approve of and I try to get them to apologize and somebody else says, oh, no, it's okay.
That doesn't
And
help.
I'm always like, no, it's not okay because I said it's not okay. Mm-hmm. Let them apologize. That's what I want. So I can totally see it from Jenny's point of view as well. But the other thing I wanted to say about this particular part was that she recovers from the birth of her daughter and spends a day or two doing nothing. Now, I had a regular birth. I did not have a C-section. And I will say that I felt so much better, like, even just one day after getting rid of that kid out of my body, because I was so uncomfortable at the end. So I can imagine that she's just, like, feels, like, so relieved of that burden of being so heavy with child.
And about the laundry, it was a big deal if children, in general, in this case it was laundry, but it was something else, but it was a big deal, in caps I put, if children got into trouble and messed with chores that had the potential to affect a family's livelihood, their food store, etc.
Yeah.
While they're out there, they hear hoofbeats, and Jenny says it's not Jamie's horse. Ian is riding back alone, dirty, his face bruised, his eyebrows split, his wooden leg is gone. When he finally gets up to them, he tells them that he was out with Jamie. They met the watch near the mill, and the watch had been waiting for them. So Jamie was still alive, at least when he was taken, he says. He was not wounded, but that they were headed west, toward Killin. And I thought that was a very nice choice for a name of Diana's. And I did Google it, or I did search for it. It is a real town in Scotland. So they took... The watch took Ian's horse and leg, which was enough to keep him from following them. Now, if he had been an able-bodied person, they may have killed him or taken him with them. Who knows?
But the watch wasn't really known for
killing. They wanted the money.
Yeah, I mean,
if they knew who's the price on someone's head.
But I don't think that they would have killed him to do it. I think they would have definitely incapacitated him.
Sure.
And may have damaged him further than what they did, but I don't think...
But they didn't have to because they knew that taking his leg away would make him not able to really get around quickly at all.
Correct. So maybe it did save him from a further beating.
But it does say... Diana does say that he had to find a place that had a horse and then ride home. So was he crawling or hopped?
He obviously lost... his pride was so wounded by this. I mean, you could tell.
Of course.
He was... He had to get home, and he had to tell somebody, but, you know, his pride was so wounded to have to crawl or however. I mean, he could have hopped for a period of time, I'm sure.
2 hours, though, that we don't know. So Jenny tells Claire to quickly take care of Ian, anything that she can do quickly, and that she'll give the baby to Mrs. Crook, and then she'll fetch the horses. Plural. Claire is agog, and Ian says that she doesn't mean to let the English hang her brother.
Well, of course not.
Especially after the last time he was taken.
Right.
And she couldn't.
Well, you generally don't escape more than once.
Yeah. So Claire and Jenny make it to the place.
He is described kind of like a cat at several times.
Claire and Jenny make it to the place where the two men were ambushed. And she says they went east. So they camped out in the woods, Jenny and Claire. I've forgotten how skilled Jenny was. And she says that she made Jamie and Ian show her all these things and even how to skin an animal. Most impressively, I thought, was her tracking ability.
True. But as an only daughter, if you will, the only female child in that family, if you're not hanging out with your brothers, you're not hanging out with kids. At least not, you know, your family. So why would you not want to hang out with them? So, and if that's what they're doing, show me.
And it also makes sense what Jenny says regarding the two of them going after the men. She says, 20 horses cannot travel very far through the brush, but two can. So it's not that they can't travel far, it's that they can't travel far without making a big mess. They can go as long as they want to go, but they're going to make a mess while doing it. And true, they'll be slow. They'll be right, slower.
They'll be way slower because they have more people to keep track of and keep up with. And
feeling her milk full, Jenny expresses herself to relieve the pressure. And Claire's amazed. Jenny says that it isn't Claire's time yet, but that she'll have bairns of her own one day. This reminded me of what you said last read-along. You said something about how in other books or in other times, you remember about Jenny not ever forgetting anything.
Yeah.
And it kind of, she kind of is a little haunting. About if
she'd ever seen Jenny. A witch, then it was Jenny in yes. that moment.
Yes.
I don't know if they should keep this.
Keep the line?
No, the scene. Oh. I don't know that I want to watch that.
I'm sure they wouldn't show that.
I mean, it's very informative, and it was good for me, because when I first read this, I was not a mother. And it was kind of like, hey, heads up, y'all. This weird stuff's going to happen to your body. But I don't know that I necessarily want to watch it. On TV, just saying.
The two women find the watch the next day. They observe for a bit, and then Jenny decides to ask where they've taken Jamie. So the men have to travel single file down the road. They wait until the last man comes through. Jenny steps out in front of him, and he reins up his horse, and Claire hits him over the head with a fallen branch. And they take the man, Robert McDonald, of the Glen L. Reeve Watch, and tie him to a tree. While he's unconscious.
Well, it's easier that way.
And Robert tells them, when he comes to, obviously, that Jamie is dead and that he escaped into the river and he must have been shot when they, or hit when they shot at him, because his body never came back up.
Well, he says that he must be dead. Like, exactly. There's no other answer.
But they didn't, exactly. Know. But they never saw a body. So Jenny believes that Jamie can't be dead because he swims like a fish and he can hold his breath for minutes on end.
As we saw in the last couple chapters. Well, the chapter with the water wheel.
They look along the riverbank and eventually find the leather strap he was bound in. They do track him a little further, but Jenny does have to get back to Lallybroch. So she says that the one place Jamie wouldn't go is home, because he would be bringing the danger back to them, and he would never do that to them. Jenny says that she'll spend one more night before she leaves. But, surprise, surprise, they have a visitor. Murtaugh surprises them.
It's not a surprise to me.
No. Well, you've read the book.
But I love the way he just kind of shows up.
Yes.
That was so funny because he's like, kind of like misdirection. They looked everywhere but where he was, and then when they turned around to the fire, there he was.
They tell him what they learned, and Jenny decides to actually leave that night to return home. And Murtaugh says she should leave in the morning, it'll be fine by first light. And she says, no, I will not leave my nursling longer than I need to. They have some great repartee here, and I hope, just sure. like they did before in the kitchen, I hope they keep this, because this is too awesome. A great line is, I didn't ken I was trying to talk sense into a wild sow. Get a tush through the leg for my trouble, I expect. Now, when I first read it, it didn't make sense. Or all the times. To me, that looks like tush.
Yeah, it's but obviously I imagined not tush. It was tusk.
Well,
like
yeah.
a tusk, a well, wild sow.
It is kind of. Well, exactly. So it has to do with that. The dictionary says, a long pointed tooth, especially a horse's canine. But yes, and it also is Old English or Middle English. So yes, it's definitely akin to a tusk. And of course, since they're talking about boar hunting and then the wild sow, it's obviously okay. related to a pig.
I'm going to have to talk to Lene about this, but I can't imagine a horse having a long pointed tooth. I've seen horses' mouths numerous times over the years. And
they have pointed,
I always
though,
think
they
about
long,
them having
flat.
Like the flat, long teeth, just all of them kind of long and flat. I can't imagine. I don't envision a horse having canines per se.
But it does rhyme with lush and not bush.
Yes.
So it's not a bee bottom. So Jenny calls Claire her good sister, which I thought was interesting. And it reminded me of, I couldn't find it, I just only did a quick search. But I think, because Diana has it exactly like this, good hyphen sister. So it's a compound noun. Diana writes it good hyphen sister. And so it's not saying you're my good sister, it's good sister. And what this first made me think of was the Arthur Miller play, The Crucible.
No, The Goody.
Yep. And Goody is short for good wife.
Mm-hmm.
So you have good wife and I think good husband. And there's more than that, but that's what it made me think of. So
yeah,
this is around the same time. That was in the 17th century, so it would have been like 1692.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was in 1692. And it was late 1600s. And here we have kind of early, almost mid-1700s. So it's not that far of a reach to say it's related.
For sure.
So Myrta also says that she'd find a new kitchen maid, Widow McNabb, when she got back to Lallybroch. And he says there was a fire and the ashes would still be warm. And I wrote, Claire and Jenny walk away.
But they have this, like, they have this giant, like, unspoken conversation.
Yes.
Like, between just looking at each other.
Mm-hmm. And Claire asks if it was McNabb that gave Jamie to the watch. And Jenny nods.
I mean, no one's surprised. Come on.
No, of course not. And Ian will have found out, she says. Claire has flashes of a Guy Fawkes bonfire and remembers Jamie's words. There is a fine line sometimes between justice and brutality. So that refers to the fact that it was, whether it was Ian or not, someone lit McNabb's house on fire.
True, and I think it's interesting that same quotation was about McNabb to begin with, and it's about McNabb now.
Yeah. So she nods at Jenny in agreement at what had to be done. Jenny gives Claire the rents from quarter day and also the ski and do. Jenny says to Claire, Jamie said that you might tell me things sometimes, and he said that if you did, I was to do as you said. Is there anything you wish to tell me? Diana writes, being a prophet was a very uncomfortable occupation.
There's so much pressure. Because think about it. She's like, I don't know when I'm coming back, and I need to tell her something that will be relevant and will get her through, because we may all die on this mission trying to get Jamie back. So I need to get her ready for anything that could happen. Yeah, for anything.
So she prepared her prophecy. She tells her, plant potatoes, which I thought was kind of funny, but just because it was so short. So plant potatoes, put as much ground to crops as you can. There will be famine. There will be war. And also to build a priest's hole. Amazingly and thankfully, Jamie had the forethought to tell Jenny that Claire might tell her things.
Well, because...
And bless Jenny for trusting him and believing her.
Agreed.
Because, that's the biggest thing.
Because if Claire had just said, hey, Jenny, come here for a second. I want to tell you something.
Uh-uh.
And, I mean, Jenny would have been like, dude, you're nuts. But because Jamie was like, dude, I want to...
Because she heard it from different sources. Exactly.
Let me tell you something. My lady friend is very knowledgeable, you know.
She has the sight.
Right. So.
So Jenny tells Claire, God go with you, Claire. We'll meet again when you bring my brother home. And this, as Summer said, this is where the going gets tough and rough and speedy, Gonzales.
Right. And like I said, it's all downhill from here, but not in a bad way. It's downhill because it just picks up and it's really hard to put down at this point.
But it stays intense till the darn end.
By downhill, I just mean we get the ball rolling, and it just keeps picking up speed and picking up speed, and it's harder and harder to put down as each chapter goes by.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, if you're in a book and you're already on chapter 33 and they're only 41, why stop?
I know.
That's silly.
If we weren't doing a read-along, this would be the point where I would stay up all night finishing. For sure. So that wraps up chapters 32 and 33. Next episode, we will be covering chapter 34, entitled Dougal's Story. So please read and come back and join us.
We'd like to share our final two entries for the Best Boo competition for a Pocket Jamie.
สวัสดีค่ะ, Ginger กับ Summer. Hi, Ginger and Summer. My name is Sasa. I live in Bangkok, Thailand. I came across Diana Gabaldon's Outlander book from my effort to find a good long audiobook to listen to during work 2 years ago. I really want my own pocket Jamie because now I have to use a double gang of PJ for my picture, and this is such a good opportunity for me to have the authentic one.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Overby, and I discovered the Outlander series 3 years ago because I needed something to listen to while driving my daughter Tessa approximately 500 miles. We were visiting colleges. This summer, I'll be taking my baby, my last child, my forlorn little Rachel, on more college visits, and I'd love Pocket Jamie to go with us while we listen to Moby, Diana's eighth book.
So thank you again so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Last night, that my young